at another time on what we'd like to see, or we ask staff to come back and answer some further, if there's further questions we'd like to ask staff. So, all right, I'll start on my left, Councilmember Peak.
Are we going for questions now, or you kind of went on a, okay. Well, I did have a question. Just one final question is, at what point have any municipalities in California or counties that have legalized any form of either delivery, retail, have any of that ever been voted on by the residents of that city or that county particularly, not voted on by five people representing the whole city? My follow-up question or comment would be, you know, if we didn't have bars, alcohol in town, and the city council said, we're going to start putting bars everywhere too, that would be a big concern to people that live in town. Now, once things are adopted, generally there's a big, there's, if it's an opposition, there's a big uproar, and then it kind of settles down that how everything is. Bars have been around for decades, you know? But I'm just, do you have an answer to that question before I move on?
Staff doesn't have that information. I think what you're referring to is sort of a ballot box initiative
right. Kind
of process where the voters come up and
public
say,
outreach.
We want to, you know, alter a city ordinance by ballot. I don't know if there's other cities in our state that have gone through that process to
okay.
get there.
So I think leading into like a lot of what we heard tonight, you know, there's legitimate reasons people use it. I'm not going to argue against that. You know, in 2016, we voted in favor majority of Prop 64. I also don't believe personally that meant that those people that voted yes wanted retail stores in all their towns. I think people voted for decriminalization more so. And if that was added on the Prop 64, I just don't think there'd be the same widespread support if that meant down the street there's going to be a cannabis retail shop. I don't know that for a fact. I think a lot of what the opinions that we have shared here and the opinions that we have in the city council are generally conjecture at this point. I can't definitively say that a cannabis store is going to lead to a kid becoming schizophrenic. You hear one side of the study say kids become schizophrenic. You have one side saying cannabis stores. There's studies that will support either side. You can dig them up all day, just like with any other political matter or any matter. I'm more concerned with, you know, the principle, number one, I'm against like special regulation for anything. So even if like you say, okay, we can do retail cannabis, or you can do strip clubs, or you can do more alcohol, you can do bars where you want them to do, like anything you want to do. I'm not equating strip clubs to cannabis, but I'm just saying like anything that's not normally in Atascadero right now, I would never be someone to say there has to be a special tax for a special school program, and you can only have two, and the biggest people, the biggest players in the county are going to get the first shot at it because they have the most capital and they have the most clout. So I'm not in favor of special taxation for anything, pretty much ever, or special requirements for certain businesses ever. And I think this one is, this type of sensitive subject, this business, everywhere you go, it's so regulated, it's so overregulated. And maybe, yeah, there's extra security. It's safer than some people might think it is. But it comes with a whole like slew of unknowns. You know, I think the principal part of it is in terms of regulation, I'm against overregulating and special regulation for certain industries in general. So, you know, there could be agreements there for some people that are pro it, for it. Some people are against it. And number two, gateway drug. Anything that alters your mind is a gateway drug if you're predisposed to be addicted to something. I think alcohol could be your first drug, and then all of a sudden you're on heroin, you're doing meth. I mean, whatever changes your mindset, if you're an addicted personality, it's going to happen if you dabble. I also think that growing up in a household where the adults drink on a daily basis, even if they say this is what adults do responsibly, the kid is more likely to get to drink at an earlier age and possibly spark an addictive personality. I think adults that smoke weed around their kids on a regular basis, conjecture, It's all conjecture, but in my experience, seeing it and seeing people that have addictive behaviors, generally their story is that it was normalized in their childhood. So just want to put that out there, that gateway drug, everyone throws weed around. I mean, alcohol is a gateway drug. Everything's a gateway drug that changes your that's the way I look at it. So we shouldn't discount, and we shouldn't speak so highly of taxes and speak so little of youth. So I think that should be something that it kind of irks me when we obsess over how much taxes we can get and we speak less about the consequences on the youth. I will go on to say that there's a legitimate, like, you know, Mr. Boyle, there's legitimate reasons to have medication. There's legitimate reasons to have it available and have it illegal. I'm for decriminalization of anything an adult wants to do. I'm not typically in favor of always having those things on display for the public and for kids and for whatever. It's kind of a dichotomy, the way I think on this topic. If you said, I want A1 liquor store to be across from on Pueblo Avenue by La Mexicana, wherever that liquor store is on the side of El Camino, right behind apartments over there, I would say, no, we're not putting liquor stores like that there. I mean, it's sort of the cat's out of the bag, but my opinion would be, I don't want a liquor store somewhere where, you know, the public is going to be. I'm going to get further down to my point. I also don't think that the problem is the customer of the cannabis stores. So we talk about demographic, the people that shop there. They're adult human beings. I mean, like, the problem is not the people going into the store. The problem is whether or not the public wants it there. And I think it's it's important to remember that we're not slow, we're not Morro Bay, and we're not Grover Beach. And I think that it's really, we'd be doing a disservice to our residents to just push this thing through and say, yeah, we want to pursue this without taking some sort of outreach and going further down the policy hole. When I probably talked to 50 residents over the past 3 weeks, talked to CHP, talked to district attorney, and law enforcement pretty much echoes what Chief Settle says. Since it's been legalized in Prop 64, they don't go after it. If there's an illegal grow and there's, like, you know, narcos involved, then yeah, the DA will get involved, but they're not going to go after a dispensary that's embezzling money. That's a different jurisdiction. So the DA is not really interested in it. CHP is a little bit different. They spoke about the DUIs a little differently, the two officers that I talked to, and that you don't really know. It's hard to tell. They don't display the same sort of behaviors. So it's an unknown, you know. If someone smokes or eats cannabis on a daily basis, like I used to do, you're more or less sort of inebriated all the time. I mean, I'm not saying everybody's an irresponsible cannabis user. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying everybody's an irresponsible drinker. I think the more availability of it, it won't change the amount that the normal people will be using it, but it might make people that probably wouldn't normally use it decide to start using it. And I don't know if that's a, from business, I'm very conflicted because, like, you know, it's a business. You want to be able to do what you want to do if it's legal. But I think that there's a certain threshold where I just don't want to feel comfortable making the call as a council person without having some sort of outreach from the community. Because a lot of people I've talked to, they're either indifferent about it or they vehemently do not want it in Atascadero. And that's 50 random people, you know, my gym, coffee shop, anywhere I talk to, I've been asking people point blank, what do you think about this? Like, on the spot, and just seeing what they say. And that's a very random population, but it's also circles that I go in around town. I'm a pretty out there person. I'm always around town. I always see people. I always talk to people. Go to chamber mixers. And the biggest ones the biggest thing, I'm not going to, I didn't have permission to name names, but someone working in homeless services vehemently opposing it. And I thought that was interesting. And I think that I'm finding that certain people that are stereotypically, I would think, would be for it, are against it. And certain people that I would think would be for it or against it are for it. So it's really, it's an interesting topic for sure. And I think we have a big cross section of Atascadero that just doesn't agree on it. And the overlay zones are interesting, not the overlay zones, but the red buffer bubbles. I'm still confused if that means no, or if that means yes, the bubble, the red bubble. I'm guessing it means no, because it's red. But where they would go would be interesting, because you might have it down in Grover Beach, and you have an industrial zone like that. But around here, there's very little, there's open retail space, but there's very little availability of commercial warehouse space and buildings. So you'd have to build a building. I mean, kind of in that industry. And I've recently found one. And where I'm at, I asked the neighbors, would you be okay with a cannabis retailer in the center? Hell no. Like, that's just their, I'm not saying that is everybody in town. I'm just saying this is not a topic I think that should be discussed and decided by five people. And I wish there was case study if it was like cities that had opposition, because I think we're still leading too much with how much tax we can get out of this thing. And that's not the right way to do it. And I respect Cal Roots, sorry for if I got that wrong, and Megan for coming here. But also I just discount your guys' opinion a little bit tonight, more so than like Mr. Boyle's or others, because you have a business interest in wanting us to do this. And so I would be remiss not to mention that. I think that the market share is a big thing to me, because I personally believe that there's a benefit to cannabis for certain people. I also think that you add more retail style things to a community that already has access to delivery. Maybe it's more expensive. Maybe the gas and the time is about the same cost. Maybe it's more of a social thing. It will create more cannabis users, and maybe that's fine. Maybe that's what people want to do, and everybody decides that's what we're doing, and they're adults and they have a free will. I'm just not sold on Atascadero for our sense of place right now.
Are you suggesting that perhaps a more detailed community survey, or even a formal one, or are you even suggesting the possibility of putting this on the ballot? Or because it sounds like you're wanting more, you know, more feedback from the community, if you will.
Why don't you move on to someone else for a minute?
Sure, think about it. Mayor Pro Tem Darris.
Thank you. This is probably one of the more difficult things that I've had to deliberate on. I, as a council member and planning commissioner for a number of years, I kind of prided myself on being able to remove my personal opinion out of my decision, because that's not what's important. It's the community as a whole on the decisions that we make up here. And with respect to, that's what's making this very difficult, because I have a very deep personal experience with marijuana use. Sorry. This is a little harder than I thought it was going to be. I don't use it. I've tried it. I don't like it. I've never been a user, but I've known people that have. And before I get to that, I would never vote up here to deny somebody the medical use, the medical access to this. I mean, if we were talking about allowing a medical dispensary, if that even is such a thing, then that would be a no-brainer. I'm okay with that. I have no problem with that. What I've researched and read about marijuana and the way it's changed over the years, from 2012 to 2022, according to things that I've read, the people surveyed, of course, you can take that with a grain of salt, it's gone from 28% to 44% for the number of people using it. So it most definitely has gone up. We all don't know, but the THC levels are incredibly higher from the marijuana that was available in the 70s and 80s and even into the 90s. 1 to 3% THC levels, now 20 to 30%. a study that I had heard, and I think I saw it was a spot on 60 Minutes, and I think they might have been referring to data that they collected from Colorado, that was there was an increase in DUIs, significant increase in DUIs from marijuana use. Recent report that was published in, I think, the New York Times, indicated that of the fatal car accidents that have happened, and I don't know if it was nationwide or if it was a specific location or specific region of the United States, but of fatal car accidents, 40% of the drivers had THC in their system. My personal experience, you know, is I believe that it is a gateway drug. I know a lot of people don't. There's probably several people in this room that don't believe it is. I don't necessarily believe that everybody that uses marijuana will graduate to something harder. But I think if you look at the statistics of people that use hard drugs, started with marijuana, they graduate to harder drugs, become addicted, and in some cases, you'll find them in, sorry, I didn't know this was going to happen, in a restroom with a needle in her arm. Like my brother. I have a friend whose son is, I think he's 38 now, but he was a heavy marijuana user. I don't even know if it was heavy, as a teenager, and ultimately became very schizophrenic in his mid-20s, and has ruined his life. He's doing much better. He's medicated, but that has been the effect of marijuana. Another young lady that I met through her parents, we became friends with her parents when I moved to town. She was about, I think, maybe 5 years old. So I've been in town, I've been in the area for about 34 years. Began using marijuana as a teenager. She graduated to harder drugs and overdosed. And when I found out that this had happened, I was absolutely blown away. She was this beautiful, young, blonde girl that if you had bet me anything, I would have said that she doesn't even drink. But she got into it. And it just blows me away how somebody can get to a point where they want to put a needle in their arm. What is that drug doing to them? So with these things in mind, this is my personal issue with the drug and feeling like I can't let myself be a part of this being an easier access to it one way or another. I think most of us have, you know, as young teenagers, when we're going to go out partying on Saturday, we're not old enough to buy beer, but we can find somebody that's 21. Even if it's, hey, buddy, don't even know the guy walking into the liquor store. A little harder these days, but 40 years ago, I did it, you know, and I'm sure that that practice is used even for cannabis shops. And anybody that's going to tell me it doesn't happen is lying. Okay. Young people, as it was mentioned, as young as 12, seventh grade, using marijuana. What is normalizing it? What is making this easy to get? I don't want to make it easier. I'm sorry for being as sort of hard on this as I am. But this has been a very difficult thing for me to see so many people in my life, family and friends, that have been affected by it. So it's a drug to me. It's a nasty drug. I should probably feel the same way about alcohol. My mom had, I think, 7, 8 brothers and sisters. Every single one of them was an alcoholic. The only one that wasn't was my mother. She didn't touch alcohol because she saw what happened. All of her sisters, except for two, were older than her. But everybody, so it's in the family. That propensity to be addicted to something is there. So this is something that, you know, I have a very difficult time with it. I'm pro-business. I want to see the city have good tax revenue, and but I think there's better ways to get about it. I think the outreach thing is a good idea. I like what Seth brought up. I think that's good. I'm not personally convinced that there is a substantial tax revenue. I would like to hear more information on that. For what it's worth. I think vaping, that's another thing I got in notes here. I mean, it's more than just gummies and smoking it and whatever other ways it's ingested. Vaping, I see so many young kids vaping, and I don't know what they're putting in that stuff or where they're getting it or how they're getting it. It's not supposed to be legal for them, but they're using it, and they're using it out in the open. Anyway, that's my feeling on this. This is a hard one. I'm using my personal feelings on my decision on this one, and I'd rather not see a cannabis shop for recreational use in Atascadero.
Right. Thank you, and we'll come back to that, to some of the things you mentioned, Councilmember Funk.
thank you, Mr. Mayor. So I'm not a cannabis user. The constituent that I talked most with, who ever since I've been on the council, he started talking with me about wanting to be able to have local access to cannabis, was my next door neighbor, and he got to know what he was doing. And he is now passed, and that's not because of any issues with drugs, but because he was in his late 80s, and cannabis helped him control the shakes that he had as a retired firefighter and naval veteran. It was very helpful, and he just like, can I please not have to drive so far to be able to see and choose what will work for me, and to find the products that help. As I look at this, sort of treeing down, we, like many of you, as a business owner, I want to be supportive of business opportunities in our community that are healthy for our community, that fit. And so I look at this and see do we have reason to not allow this particular type of business, if people want to do it, if it can be done in a limited way that works in our community. And there are a lot of ways this could go, but I'm just seeing that the data doesn't suggest that this is as scary or as dangerous a business model to have. Individual people may have terrible journeys with any number of substances, legal and otherwise. I am much more concerned about the impact of our youth of illegal drug use. In particular, we are in the age of fentanyl, and drugs that people buy on the street can be laced with fentanyl. To the point, we had a kid in this community that got a Percocet from a friend and died on his family's couch because it was laced with fentanyl. That's the illegal market. This was just somebody he thought he could trust, a friend. When we make it possible for people to have what many people talked about tonight, a known product from an identifiable source that will stand behind that product, that is not going to get laced with other stuff and God knows what. It's a lot safer for people, for those who choose to partake of this substance, which is legal in California, and which a majority of our voters support it being legal to do. It's much safer if they get it from a store. And what I see of these stores, my experience of that is consistent with what the mayor mentioned. I go by, I confess this to Ms. Souza at the break. I go by Megan's Organic Market in San Luis Obispo on Higuera every time I go to an HSOC meeting, and there are lots of them. And I probably went by that store for about 2 years before I realized that it was a cannabis store, because it was quiet and subtle. And we could have stores that are of that, you know, quiet, that don't advertise, that, you know, cannabis and lights sort of thing, can be quiet. And I'm just imagining, you know, a quiet little shop somewhere, you know, say, for instance, somewhere over by the Valley Fresh Market, and, you know, you have somebody coming out of the cancer center, and they can go across the street or down the street and get the products that might help with their chemotherapy, or help them cope with the situation, and that the availability of those legal products for adults in a very controlled environment does not seem like something that would increase the illegal availability, and has the potential to decrease. You know, it's not going to cure the black market, but it might take a little edge off of it. And every time we reduce some of the black market, we reduce the chance that somebody gets exposed to other drugs that may be even more dangerous. So I think that having the opportunity for the people who are already buying cannabis who live here to be able to spend their money here, and if we have a store too that somebody wants to open up, I don't see us having, you know, four or five stores. I don't even really see three. I think a couple of stores would be plenty in this community, in part because if we have a smaller number of stores, it makes the oversight work for the police department much more manageable. And that I think we need to be attentive to. You know, we are a community that we don't we don't hire a czar and several people to start a new program. we do things, you know, we staff very leanly because we are a community with very low tax revenues per capita. This would help us a little bit. It's not going to cure the world, but we can't, as a city, give money to Lighthouse now or any other not-for-profit. I mean, because we don't have the tax revenue. And being able to have a little bit better tax base is responsible to the future of our community. It helps us fund public safety. It helps us do the kinds of outreach. And, you know, I see us looking towards a business that would have community benefits that we would look to have either as a specified thing for the business or a way that the council uses marginal tax dollars. We do a little bit more in youth recreation scholarships than we've been able to do through CDBG money. We could do, you know, maybe have some of that money go to Lighthouse to support the things to keep the youth engaged and out of street drugs by making it easier for adults to have controlled access to substances that they already buy and keep their tax dollars here. I do think where this locates is important. And to that end, with all due respect to the gentleman who thought, you know, that recognized the valuable for generating downtown foot traffic, I think it will be really problematic for this community to see that kind of business anywhere in the central corridor of the community where we have the junior high school and the high school. I'm less worried about proximity to elementary schools, in part because elementary school kids are just too small to pass as adults and with a fake ID. And most, you know, and the, you know, the smaller the person is, the less likely somebody is to think, oh yeah, I could just do that for you. Sure. No, the getting, as Councilmember Darris mentioned, getting somebody else to buy it for them. It's, you know, the number of adults that would do that for a fifth grader is going to be very small, thankfully. So I think we can, if it's a, out of the central corridor, I don't think, you know, 500 feet or 600 feet from the high school is nearly enough, because high school kids are mobile, and I think we need to keep this out of the downtown corridor altogether. And I would be, you know, inclined to ask staff to consider just some very specific sections, you know, in the north of town. The map didn't even go beyond south of Santa Rosa, because staff wasn't finding properties that would qualify there. And I think it also reduces the amount of chaos that could come of people thinking, oh, well, let me go in and grab a property, and just in case this might be in there, and maybe this is 800 feet instead of 600 feet from this, or is it a family daycare or a bigger daycare, or, you know, all of that. Let's just establish a couple of zones where we think that this might be workable, that are already meeting the distance requirements that we have, but, you know, are sensible, and keep it out of the middle of town. I don't want to see it, you know, replacing Rite Aid, you know, or whatever. It's, and adding to the complexities of the interactions we have in a space that has high school students, junior high school students, and a methadone clinic. So I think we can, you know, but there is commercial property available in different parts of towns that somebody could choose to use in this way. I think a responsible business can be structured. And if we take a deep breath, I think we can have something that won't cure the world, but is a constructive way to move forward and generate the kind of revenue that lets us serve our youth better and create a wholesome environment in this community for families and kids. Because we have the resources that our city needs to do the policing that is outreach and engagement. So that's where I am. Let's keep it simple. Let's keep it limited. Let's ask staff to come back with the details, and definitely to move forward with the next steps should be with those kind of, come back with that kind of a program and some real outreach that we can talk in more specifics. Because most people, when asked on the street, do you favor this, don't have the benefit of knowing what actually these businesses are, how they are regulated, what the benefits or risks might be. And we, you know, they haven't read this wonderful staff report that we have. And so we want to be able to have some good educational materials, lots of conversations, and see if this isn't something that we can allow, you know, a few more people to build the business that of their dreams, and in a way that would be constructive within the community.
Thank you. Councilmember Newsom.
Thank you. It's hard to sit on this dais and not know people that are affected on both sides of this. I mean, we are elected by a community that voted it in on proposition, and then those that have come to us and asked us to hear this and consider the information. It's hard. I don't think that we need to be doing something just because it generates money, just because Grover, Morro Bay, or San Luis chooses to do it. I do agree that it is a gateway drug, as is any substance that alters someone's state of being. I do feel that there is more indications of our younger adults, our youth using marijuana, and it's altering them and creating mental health issues. We haven't even talked about what it does to impair their system down that side. I don't think that there's enough information that says that we really want this in our community. I think that it's not compatible with our downtown. I don't think that's where it should even be considered. I think with looking at some of the other requirements of other locations, I just don't think that fits everybody in our community. So at this point, I'm not willing to go forward on it. I don't think that we've done enough public outreach. I don't think we have the information we need to put something in that is permanent and that will have lasting effects on our youth, whether it be restricting it enough to where it doesn't overlap anything that corresponds to our children. We need to protect our children, and that's where I stand on it.
Thank you, and thank you especially for your brevity. I think it's a good comment that we probably all know somebody who has died of some sort of an addict or some sort of drug use. My brother began using marijuana and drinking in high school and ultimately died of alcoholism at the age of 48. And we all know people like that, that you know, in our, either in our families or in close associations. I see that I feel like, you know, we don't have a consensus to move forward. But if you look at this first question here, outreach strategy, I think several of you talked about, you know, needing a more defined outreach strategy or needing to do more outreach. And I'm going to kind of look to staff, but it seems to me that outreach comes in the form of either survey. It looks to me, I have an example here that I picked up at a Lighthouse meeting last week or 2 weeks ago. You know, that was a survey that I think was done in Paso Robles. But the problem with, you know, non-professional surveys is the people that tend to answer a survey, if you just put it out on a website, are people who are very opposed or very for something. You don't get a random sample. You get the people who are energized about an issue, and they either hate it or they love it, and those are the people that respond typically. So I'm curious, with my colleagues, whether or not you would want to do some outreach in terms of either maybe a more professional survey, or if you'd want to punt the ball. And I imagine it may not have been done other places, but you certainly could put this on a ballot as a measure in the November 26 election. I'm waking up the city attorney there and Mr. Dunsmore.
You know, we did find a community that actually did a ballot initiative for this, and it was the city of or the community of
Pacific Grove.
You know, Pacific Grove.
While you were talking about it, I was looking to see, and in the 2022 ballot cycle, there were listed about a dozen cities that had put it to a vote of the people after the legalization under Prop 64 as to what that would look like. I haven't taken a look at each of the individual cities to see how it came about, whether or not it was a citizen-driven initiative or a council initiative put on the ballot, but either are an option for this community should you want to put it on the ballot. There are obviously attendant costs in putting something like that on the ballot, right, that we would need to bring back for budgetary authority, but that certainly is a way to do it.
And it would be why you wouldn't do it until, you know, our regular election in November of 26. And thank you. I didn't mean to imply you were sleeping. You were just looking down, working, and I knew that. So
multitasking to the extreme.
If anybody at home thought that. Anyway, I don't know if there's an interest in, you know, conducting some more formal survey or some other form of outreach, which I'd see if staff would have any other suggestions. Because clearly, I mean, you know how I feel. You know, I put my feelings out there. I'd like to see us move forward, but there's obviously not a consensus up here to do that at this point. So I'm looking at, do we need to do more outreach? Because that's what I heard from several of you.
I think that this is an important enough issue that the five of us should not be deciding whether or not a cannabis shop is allowed in Atascadero. If the voters approved it, then I'm not going to say anything about it. Then it is what it is. It's kind of like what we went through with 3CE. You know, we could have just said, nope, we're just going to give you one choice. But we let the voters, or we allowed them to choose. Not the vote, they didn't vote, but we voted to give them at least the options that were available. So in something like this, for us, you know, this is a hot topic. This is, you've got people that are maybe on the fence, but you've got people that are absolutely opposed and people that are thinking it's a great idea for different reasons on both sides, for both good or bad. But I think that this is the perfect type of thing to let the residents of Atascadero decide if this is what they want instead of the five of us up here.
Councilmember Pete?
I chime in on that.
Sorry, the heat sensor on this button is feeling my cold, dead fingers. how much is it to run an election, to run a ballot measure?
So the price is changing. Every time we look, it's more expensive. It's a frustration of mine, frankly. But it's five figures. So the election itself is close to six figures. And then for being in it, each question is not six figures. So it's a five-figure number. I can't tell you. I don't know what it'll cost in 2 years, but it's a...
We've done it in the past. It's been in the 30 to maybe nowadays to the 50.
But that's the degree of... It's not 200,000. It's not a million. It's, you know, maybe a five-figure number per question.
I think that we've utilized a lot of staff resource to do it. I don't see us spending a huge amount of money that we don't have to go forward on something that we don't have a consensus on.
Can you say that again?
I said that we have utilized a lot of staff resources to ask them to come back a third time to the council with their research, all of the information that they're doing on the staff reports. But I also feel like if we do put a ballot measure on there, it is a substantial amount of money that we're incurring on something that we can't even come to as a consensus. So I'm saying, is that something really we want to impose more financial restrictions on our city that's already stretched, especially with the amount of staff time that's going into the general plan that we're trying to get through?
If we decided we wanted to put something out there, refer to the voters, staff wouldn't need to address that till essentially spring of next year or summer of next year, correct?
Right. The process would start June. We'd have independent analysis, arguments in favor, you know, that there's that stuff.
Sure.
We'd have to put it in. It starts in June. We'd probably bring it back to
you. It would need to come to council for a decision May, June-ish.
Right. And essentially, the major part of the work there is essentially identifying what is the question.
Yes.
The wording of the question we'd want to ask voters would be... That's essentially the work. In other words, I guess my question is, in response to Councilmember Newsom's question, is I don't see that as highly burdensome on staff. Is that correct, or is that
I think if you were just simply, by the way, this decision never gets easier, and so the staff direction right now is 2-2 and not sure. So you know, we're really, I can see why it's a tough spot for you as far as how much do we engage in outreach, how much do we. I think if you were just simply saying, hey, the city council wants to know your opinion on whether we should have retail cannabis in the city or not, vote yes or no, whether you want it or not, that's one thing, right? That would, there'd be some staff work, but not like most ballot measures that are put on a ballot have the ordinance already done and all the work, and you're asking the voters, because a voter is not going to know what they're voting. Retail can't, well, what kind of signage? Where can it be? Where can it, they're not going to know. And so usually you put on a ballot the law, and you ask the voters, do you want to approve this or not? If we can't get to a point where you as a council want to send forth a law, that would be a lot of staff work because we wouldn't even know what to put in the question. So I think that's where, if you want to have this discussion in the spring, we could. It'll still be the same people, the same situation. But I'm cautious about that for you because we'll wait. And then if you want to ask the question, that's fine. But it's another basket of what are you asking the voter and how do you clarify that? And that's where it starts to get hard because a voter wants to understand what they're voting on, right? They want the background, they want the information, they want to understand, is a yes, is a where's this? And so that's where I'm a little cautious on how much staff work is.
Sure, I think that's a good point that, I mean, you can't simply ask the question, you know, should Atascadero allow cannabis dispensaries? Because you're saying a lot of voters would obviously have more detail.
You could, but
you know, that would, a lot of voters would go, well, yeah, but where, when, how, whatever. Understand. In contrast to that, it would also cause in the low five figures to do a formal professional survey, correct? Yeah, it would cost in the low five figures to do a professional survey.
Yeah, they're right around $28,000 to $30,000 right now.
And in doing that, you know, a professional, truly randomized survey of our residents. In that case, you could also ask other questions that in a survey. You could ask other questions. You could get into a few more, not 3 pages of questions like PASO might have done, but you could ask several questions related to this issue. But since you're spending the time and the money, you could ask perhaps any other questions that might be worthy of getting a community response on. So you could serve another purpose. Is that right?
Yes. If the council wanted to spend $30,000 on a survey, I would certainly hope we could ask a few other questions that were strategic to things that the council wanted to do, for sure.
Right. I think you maybe have might even had an example of that, but okay. All right. I'm just laying that out there as, you know, it sounded like you like the idea of going to voters, but maybe there's more to it. As Councilmember Newsom expressed the concern about staff time, you know, about developing something specific enough. Are you over here interested in doing a professional survey? You guys wanna weigh in?
I think it, I mean, given that any kind of outreach strategy is going to require some staff time and going to involve some costs, I actually think, although I didn't come in thinking about a professional survey, that might be a useful next step, given where this council is, that we could just structure a number of questions that would let us get better information on the things that hang us up, you know, about, you know, where and how many and what, you know, whether to do this. You know, given, and does it make a difference if it generates, you know, $250,000 in tax revenue versus $500,000 additional tax revenue or something that helps people? Or what would it?
Sure, there's lots of questions that could be asked.
A variety of ways.
This issue.
So maybe. I think rather than, if the council's game for this, I think that might be constructive, because it's going to cost. We are looking at something that is a significant revenue opportunity, that is easily multiples of the cost of this particular outreach strategy, and it would give us a lot stronger data about where our community is, and allow us to craft something that has support and help, and give us a way forward or a determination not to, given that there's a lot of divided opinion within this council and within our community.
Well, and it would give us, you know, factual feedback on our residents. I mean, you know, maybe it comes out 50-50 and we're kind of, you know, still divided, but maybe it comes out 80-20 one way or the other or something, and that would be really informative. So, Councilmember Peake, haven't heard your comment on this.
A formal survey is fine for certain things. I think this is one of those things. It's like, I'm inclined to kind of agree more with Heather tonight. I think if there was anything, it would be a bona fide ballot measure, yes or no. Because I agree with you. When you get a survey, you're going to go, oh, I love surveys. I'm going to answer this. I'm going to talk to the PG&E guy that calls me from some other state and ask me questions about my power usage. But someone in town is going to get it. They're going to throw it away. Someone who's really interested in it will answer every single question. I don't think it's a really good cross-section as much as an actual vote.
But when you pay a professional polling firm to do it, I mean, they look at getting a valid cross section of residents, and they keep, you know, calling and reaching out to them. They don't send you something in the mail that you throw away or decide. They keep going at it until, you know, they have a representative sample of the community based on, you know, age, race, income, et cetera, so that the whole purpose of paying a professional to do it is you are getting a genuine, cross-section of people, not self-chosen responders, not the people who are most interested in the issue or what have you. So, I mean, that's the purpose of paying for a professional survey.
Know that.
And again, the problem with the ballot measure, I was interested in it, but as staff pointed out, you would have to essentially do all this work and really almost come up with an ordinance that we don't have consensus on proceeding with in order to put that out as a question to the voters. So it would seem to me it would be more, it would a lot less time for staff and us to simply develop a set of survey questions. Staff could use the option or use the time to also ask other questions of the public, and that way it wouldn't take up near as much time, and it would still be, you know, a statistically valid survey, I should say. So, Councilmember Newsom?
I feel like we're still going to be 50 or 60,000 in, and this council's still going to have to draft that sample ordinance. I make a motion that we don't move forward with cannabis ordinance.
You mean with changes to the...
Just not move forward with cannabis because we can't come to a consensus. That's my motion.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. Do we have a second? And I don't know, I mean, about having an alternative motion to engage in a professional survey. I mean, he's looking for some Robert's Rules of Orders here.
There was a motion on the floor. Offer of a substitute motion. There was no second to the first one. The first motion is
I second.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second. Is one of us to offer a substitute motion?
Yeah, I wasn't clear on what the second was, to the original motion or the substitute motion.
I second the original motion.
Yeah. So we have a motion by Newsom, a second by Peak. We could offer another motion, though, to say, let's do a professional survey on the question.
You have a motion and a second at this point, so you should have discussion on
the motion on the floor. Any discussion on that, or let's vote on it?
Can you please repeat your motion, just for clarity?
To move forward with no cannabis ordinance.
Or to not move forward with changes, right?
Exactly.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second. I'm putting out there we could have another motion after we vote on this, but we should go ahead and vote on it. So... no further discussion. Let's roll call, please.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Councilmember Peak?
Yes.
Councilmember Funk?
No.
Mayor Pro Tem Daris?
Yes.
And Mayor Bourbeau?
No.
Motion passes 3-2 with Funk and Bourbeau voting no.
All right. So we're ready to move on to the next item. And... that is going to be item H2, authorization of inclusionary housing funds for Del Rio Ridge. Thank you all for coming in the audience and speaking. And we are going to turn this over to Mr. Dunsmore of Community Development.
And I'm going to pass this off to Kelly Gleason, our planning manager, and she's got some great information on this project for you.
Good evening. Glad we made it this far. This next item hopefully will be a little quicker, hopefully a little bit of a happy item to talk about. The item is People Self-Help Housing Project on North El Camino Real. They are requesting some additional funding to get their project off the ground and get construction started. So the project is located on the north side of El Camino Real. It's actually just south of the Del Rio Ranch property. Has direct access off of El Camino Real. It's currently a vacant parcel. They are proposing 41 affordable units to extremely low, very low, and low-income households. There is a manager's unit included in part of the project. So back in 2020, the city did commit $400,000 in affordable housing and lieu fees to the project to get them started. The project application was originally made in 2018, and they've been working that long to get some funding from the state for construction. The city then adopted a deferred impact fee program in 2023. That program was adopted to use city funds without actually using city funds to help leverage projects towards grant funding. That had a couple of different terms and stipulations associated with it. One of them was a 17-year repayment term that normally works with a lot of state funding sources, but this project was afforded accelerator funding, which is a little bit different funding source and requires a longer loan term period, so they cannot use our deferred impact fee program. So they are requesting their additional funds that would have come from that program from the Affordable Housing in lieu fee fund instead for a term of 22 years. So the original request as a deferred impact fee fund was $527,573. That is part of their budget, and so they are requesting that same amount of money to come from the Affordable Housing in lieu fee fund. It would go towards development impact fees, and if there's any overage based on our estimates and calculations, those additional funds would go towards other incidental permit fees for the project. Our current fund balance for the Affordable Housing in lieu fee program is $1.3 million, so we do have the funds to cover this request and their original award of $400,000. As I did mention, this is a 100% affordable project, minus their manager's unit that they'll have on site. And it does target extremely low, very low, and low-income households, which is a category that we generally need more of to work towards our RENA numbers that are allocated to us by the state. You can see the unit numbers that will be provided. Because they're using HUD funding, their percentages are a little bit different than SLO County's percentages, but they are all low or below the low income threshold and will count towards those RENA numbers for us. So authorization of the additional loan will allow the project to move forward to construction. They're hoping to pull permits by the end of the year, transfer the funds over to their contractor account in December. The repayment of this particular loan would begin upon final occupancy, which is when development impact fees are generally due. And I believe their construction is estimated to be complete in 2027. There are a couple alternatives, as always, with these types of projects. You can recommend alternative amounts or terms to the agreement. You can request additional information, or you can deny the use of the funds. That $400,000 would remain as a promise that the city already made in 2020, but the additional $527,000 could be denied. So it is staff's recommendation that the council authorize the Director of Administrative Services to appropriate the $527,000 of in lieu fee and moderate income housing funds for the People's Self-Help Project at Del Rio Ridge, and also direct staff to bring back a loan agreement for council approval at a future date. We're hoping to get that to you should this be approved to move forward at a November meeting. And then did just want to clarify that this is for a 100% affordable housing project. I know we're still working with Peoples to work out all of the loan documents and agreements that get recorded with the project, but we wanted you to have confidence that these funds would be used for the project as a 100% affordable housing project.
What was that affordability level again?
100%.
Thank you.
In the low, very low, and extremely low categories. And so with that, staff's available for any questions. We also have a representative from Peoples who has sat here and listened to some very exciting things this evening. And she is available for questions as well.
All right, thank you. And sorry I had to sit through a long session and about sewer connection phase. So any case, I have one quick question and I'll pass it on to others. Just to be clear, we're using the funds in the Affordable Housing Fund to essentially pay the fees that a developer would normally pay up front, and then we're going to give them a long period of time to pay it back later.
That's correct. So.